And next up with Linda Moulton Howe, we're going to pick up a story of high UFO strangeness in Scotland, and she'll tell you why this is such an incredible story in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. You know, Linda, I'm fascinated by these incredible stories, UFO stories that we hear from all around the planet, and you've got a dandy out of Scotland.
That's right. I've known Malcolm Robinson for a long time, and he really is a man who has wanted to go into things deeply and understand them. And he's now 52 years old. But when he was a young boy in Stirling, Scotland, he was curious about legends of ghosts and other unusual phenomena. And by 18, he wanted hard answers. Were ghosts and UFOs real? Malcolm started contacting police, airports, local flying clubs, and other authorities about times and dates of specific UFO reports to see if there might be logical human explanations for what people said they were seeing. Maybe it was an airplane and the airport could tell him what the time and the date was that airplanes were, and then he could eliminate and cross-check. And that is the way Malcolm has approached UFO investigations. And in 1979, Malcolm founded Strange Phenomena Investigations, known as SPI, to persist more formally with his passion to learn the truth. 30 years later, in the fall of 2009, Malcolm Robinson released some of his SPI investigations in a book entitled UFO Case Files of Scotland, Amazing Real-Life Alien Encounters. And perhaps the weirdest incident with multiple eyewitnesses was the night of September 23rd, 1996, beginning around 8.05 p.m. in rural central Scotland, about 35 miles north of a place called Bonnybridge that's famous, actually, for a lot of UFO sightings over the years. There was a mother named Mary Morrison, and she was traveling with her friend Jane. And Mary's young son, David, was with them, and they were going to a local village to buy some coffee. And here now is Malcolm Robinson with what happened next.
Okay.
On the way there, they became aware of this triangular-shaped object hovering above this road. They stopped the car and was amazed to see this object emitting two tubular columns of light from the underside of this craft, and like a dance, move round and round and round underneath this object, illuminating the ground before them. Now, these ladies knew, they've never seen the likes of this before. They knew it wasn't a normal aircraft or a helicopter. And then suddenly the object just lifted up into the sky and was gone. So they continued their journey. And they went and bought their jar of coffee at the shop, and then they came back along that same road. Now, that road is not a heavily populated road. The area where all this took place is in fields on either side. And as they drove back towards their house, they became aware of another, the same or similar triangular-shaped object come very, very quickly towards their car at an alarming speed. It was so fast that the young boy who was also in the back of the car started screaming out, "Mummy, Mummy, what's that?" And it flew over their car and was gone in seconds. They went back to their house, and Jane said to this teenage girl who was in the house, her friend, she says, "You'll not believe what we have just seen. It's crazy. It was one of those UFO objects." This daughter refused to believe them. They eventually coaxed this young girl to come into the car and let's go out and drive back out to that vicinity and see if we can see it again. They drove along the road and then they turned off the road to go down a smaller road and towards this range of trees. The reason they did this was coming up from this range of trees was like tubular columns of light. There was about 12 of these coming from the forest floor up through the trees, illuminating the sky and the clouds. There was red, green, and blue lights. And then suddenly they stopped the car and they looked into the sky above them. And there were hundreds and hundreds of tiny sparkling lights, like a kid's sparkler you hold in your hand. There was lots of them above their heads. And also on Falkland Hill, there was this orange ball of light. They haven't seen this before. And then, very bizarrely, they became aware of this blue mist pervaded the front of the forest. And this is where it gets really bizarre, because they claim that contained within this blue mist, they saw hundreds of small grey creatures lifting up boxes and canisters and moving them back towards a clearing in the forest, which appeared to one of the ladies to contain one of these triangular-shaped objects.
Did the eyewitnesses have the impression that these dozens of small, gray, non-human beings were digging these boxes and cylinders out of the soil in the forest?
Well, that's a good question, and that's a question I did put to the witnesses. They said, as far as they could see, they were only lifting these boxes and cylinders from the ground rather than digging them up from the ground. But that is a good question. Maybe part of that was unseen by them. They were just transfixed by these little grey creatures moving these boxes. But even more bizarrely were these very, very tall brown beings, creatures, I don't know, call them what you will, who were standing. One was standing to the right of all this activity and one to the left.
Brown color.
Brown, yeah, uh-huh. Very tall, much taller than the small grey beings. And they had flat heads at the back and a pointed face. It was very bizarre what they said. And at one point, one of these tall beings bent down with his knees and got his hand and placed the back of his hand on the forest floor. Now, what he was doing, what that indicated, I don't think we'll ever know, but that was a gesture that this being put his hand down onto the forest floor. Now, just then, the witnesses claim that two or three of these small beings then, somehow, were encased in, if you can imagine, a soap bubble. They were encased in a very big 8 to 12 foot soap bubble. Sounds bizarre, but this is what they said. And suddenly, these beings have blown across this field to their direction.
Were the small gray beings putting the boxes and the cylinders, the beams of light that were going up into the triangular craft?
As far as the witnesses could ascertain, these beings were taking these boxes and cylinders towards this triangular-shaped object in the woods.
Was the triangular craft down on the forest floor?
It was, yeah.
And that's where the gray beings seemed to be carrying the boxes and the cylinders?
That's correct, yeah.
Were the beams only coming from underground or from the ground up through the trees?
Yeah, that's correct. The beams were only coming from inside the forest, from the ground coming up.
How far were the eyewitnesses from where all this action was going on?
Probably about 500 to 600 yards.
You've got all of these small, non-human, gray beings that are moving these boxes and cylinders into the triangle on the forest floor, and you have the two extremely tall, brown-colored beings with flat back heads and pointed faces that seem to be standing either in a supervisory role or something unknown. Where do these soap bubbles come from, and what goes into the soap bubbles?
They didn't physically see any of these small creatures going into these cocoons, these soap bubbles, call them what you will. They only remember seeing these beings and the brown beings, then suddenly, bang, it was like they were there. There was these cocoons of soapy bubbles type of things moving across towards them. And Mary Morrison then put her foot on the gas and the car was speeding out of there at a terrific speed. And as it did so, the whole road, the whole area was illuminated by a massive blue burst of light, just pervaded the whole area. They just went straight back to their house. They were shaking. and they were trembling. Even though they had a massive fright, they wanted to go back out. Come on now, we've got to see some more of this. This is just extraordinary. This is bizarre. And I suppose it's human nature that you can either go two ways, either lock the doors and stay inside and that's that, or you just want to find out what happened here. And so thankfully they did go back out. They didn't see any of the soap bubble type of things, but they did see the lights and they did still see that activity. So it was pretty strange and bizarre for them.
Did the soap bubbles coming toward them reach the car?
They said to me it was only about 20, 30 feet from the car that they reached. And just before Mary shot the car into gear and took it away, she felt as if somebody was pulling her head backwards. She says, Malcolm, it's such a strange sensation. I'm looking out of the car. I'm looking at these soap bubbles containing these creatures coming towards us, 20, 30 feet away from us. And then suddenly it was like somebody's hands had clasped my head and pulled my head back. And I felt like losing consciousness. I felt like I was ready to go to sleep or something was happening to me. But thankfully, that didn't happen. I just regained my composure and I just put the car into gear and we screamed away from that alarming situation. But one of the bizarre things was that the young boy, David, who came out in the car and saw these things as well, he had a friend of his, aged about 10 years of age, come to play with him. And the mother was downstairs and the two boys were upstairs playing on the carpet, just playing with their toys. And then downstairs, the mother and the son's mother was sitting talking away. And then suddenly they heard screaming. So they rushed up the stairs and the young boy, David, says that he saw a white, not a grey, a white small creature floating outside his window with jagged teeth. And as David looked at his eyes, this creature just floated away. And when I say teeth, it's jagged teeth, pointed teeth. You've got to remember, Linda, that where this lady's house is, it's a farmhouse right out in the wilds, and it's got a commanding view on the top of a small hill. And she says, Malcolm, oh, it was beautiful, starry skies. And then I was up at the top bedroom window, and it was silence, complete silence. And suddenly I saw, coming above my head, only about 30, 40 feet above my head, this massive big flying object moving silently and very, very slowly over the rooftop of my house. Malcolm, she says, it was amazing. There were pipes, boxes, all these protrusions coming from the underside of this flying object.
What was the shape of the object?
Triangular. That's what she said.
Triangular with a whole lot of three-dimensional shapes.
Yeah, and just like a rubber band, if you're holding it in your hands and you let it go, it was gone in seconds. It was completely gone.
Jeez.
Well, you know, this is kind of one of those cases that I remember the first time I heard about it, I thought, is that possible? Could there be really hundreds of little grays out in a forest in Scotland carrying cylinders and all of that? Well, I started going back through some case files that I had in Philadelphia when I had interviewed a man who lived in New Jersey then, but he had grown up in Georgia on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an artist by his profession. And he had made a series of paintings about encounters that he had, totally conscious, live noon daylight on this farm in Georgia. And one of them, George, is a whole bunch of what we would call small gray beings with big black eyes coming down out of the air, dozens of them, coming down out of the air onto the ground. And he, when I did an interview with him, here was a quote. He said, these little gray guys seem to float down out of the sky, a bunch of them dressed in blue leotards with big black eyes, and they seem to be able to appear and disappear.
Jeez, great story.
How weird is that, right? And that was a story from a man that I met, I talked to, I saw all of his paintings, and he's talking about an event in Georgia in the 1950s, and Malcolm has interviewed this family and their friends, which was in 1996, not that long ago, in Scotland. So to me, if you're talking about high strangeness, this is not unique. Something similar really has happened. And then they're the small gray beings inside of transparent bubbles. That sounds so weird, but it reminded me of a description from the December 1980 RAF Bentwaters phenomena. And that was when Airman First Class Larry Warren said in his first interviews to the BBC and others back in 1983 that there was a translucent sphere suspended in the air outside a triangular-shaped craft, and inside the bubble-like sphere were three small gray beings with big black eyes. That's RAF Bentwaters, December 1980.
That's right.
So the idea that we listen and hear an interview about something that sounds so bizarre, but the truth is, around the world, over a long period of time, at least 30 or 40 years, there have been cases where there have been pieces similar to what Malcolm has, and with great detail in his book. And for Coast listeners, I would like to suggest that you go to earthfiles.com, because Malcolm let me use a whole lot more of photos and drawings at Earthfiles than he has in the book. And as you go through and see the remarkable, both the location and in the upcoming half hour, when we hear about what is also what I think that Malcolm would say, if this 500s, we'll call them hundreds of grays in the forest and the subsequent bubbles, sounds like high strangeness, wait until you hear what's coming in the next half hour from two men who, when this happened, it was 4 years earlier in 1992, there had not been a recorded and investigated human abduction case in Scotland until the events unfolded around these two men near Tarbrax, a small village on the A70. And Malcolm Robinson not only had them do a whole lot of illustrations, but it was Malcolm who contacted a very credible hypnotherapist and took each one of these men separately and dove into what might come out in their minds, because they knew for a fact from their friends in Tarbrax. They were supposed to have been at a house at a very specific time. They left Edinburgh, and it was, instead of 30 minutes, they arrived where they were supposed to go, almost two hours late. And when you realize that up until 1992, that Malcolm had not heard anything in Scotland about the human abduction syndrome, and then comes a case that is absolutely incredible, and it has a lot to do with other investigations that I've done for my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, which I will talk about also as another context for what has happened in Scotland.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with this incredible story of human abduction on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour we'll have conversations with Linda, and perhaps you'll share a story or two that she can begin to investigate as well. When we come back, we'll talk about more high strangeness in Scotland on Coast to Coast AM. I love those Scottish accents, by the way.
I do, too.
Know, they are just so pristine. So now this other story is a strange one, because Scotland doesn't get a lot of abduction cases, does it?
No, and this was the very first that Malcolm knew on record. And if you go back just to October of 2009, which is just, you know, the fall, STV TV in Scotland, they did an update on what we're going to hear from Malcolm, and they called it Scotland's biggest UFO incident is being made into a film. depicting the story of two men who claim they were abducted from their car on the A70 road in West Lothian in 1992. So this was a kind of breaking entertainment news story that made the headlines in Scotland in October. We wouldn't know that in the United States, but in working on this story, I'm learning that something like a feature film is going to be made on this story that you all are going to hear tonight. And it started with two men, one named Gary Wood, the other Colin Wright. The date was August 17th, 1992, so it's 4 years before the one in Fife County that we heard in the previous half hour. These men were driving from Edinburgh around 8 p.m. in the evening toward the village of Tarbrax on the A70 when they encountered a black aerial disc that may seem strange, but as Malcolm said, they emphasized it was black and it was night, but it was so shiny and something was coming off of it that they could see it clearly over the road near what is called Harapurig Reservoir in the Lothian district of central Scotland. And they know from their friends in Tarbrax, they lost 90 minutes of time. Here now, again, is Malcolm Robinson.
They were then catapulted into the twilight zone, traveling down this darkened road late at night. And then Colin, who was in the passenger seat, said to Gary, "What's that?" And Colin pointed out of the windscreen of the car, directly in front of the vehicle, 200 feet or so from the car, was this very shiny disc-shaped object hovering about 20 feet above the surface of the road. And they knew that this wasn't conventional aircraft. Whatever this was truly bizarre. Rather than stop the car, they decided, what the hell, let's just drive underneath this thing.
What shape are they seeing?
Well, they said it was a disc-shaped object, flying saucer, but like two soup plates joined rim to rim, and a smaller cupola on top of that. But it was very shiny black. It was jet black. And even though it was a dark night, the illumination from the car's headlights was shining upon it, and you could really see that it was a structured object.
Did they estimate how high above the car and what the size might have been in relationship to the road?
It's around about 35 feet in length. The reason they got that was because the tips of the side of this disc-shaped object was slightly coming over the grass verge on each side of the road.
And how far from their car?
From their car, it was only about 30, 40 yards away, and it was about 20 to 25 feet above the surface of the road. Now, as they drove underneath this object emitted like a heavy silver shimmering. It was like heavy silver snowflakes descended from the bottom of this object and hit the car. And as soon as this sparkling light effect hit the car, both men were enveloped in total and inky blackness. They couldn't see their hand in front of their face. They couldn't see the dashboard of the car. They couldn't see each other. Where the hell are we? They really, really thought that they were dead. They thought they were dead. That's exactly what Gary Wood said to me. "Malcolm, we thought we really did." Seconds later, or for them, what appeared to be seconds later, they had regained their sight. They could see once more. The car was shuddering. Shuddering very, very violently on the road, as if a big hand had lifted the car up 2 inches and dropped it back down 2 inches, trying to gain control of the car. And they just sped off in the direction of friend's house in this village of Tarbrax. And they knocked on the occupant's door, and Katrina, the friend of Gary's, opened the door. "Where the hell have you been?" And she said that they were an hour and a half late. The journey should only have taken them 35 minutes from Edinburgh to Tarbrax, and they were an hour and a half later than that. And they burst in the door, and they just said, you know, "Oh, my God, you'll never believe what we've just encountered. You'll never believe what we have just seen." And they proceeded to tell Katrina and her husband, Ian, all the things that they had seen on this road. That night and nights thereafter, they had strange, bizarre dreams of this grey alien's face, call it what you will, coming into their dream world. And then they found scars on their body. And these were fresh scars that previously were not there.
What part of their bodies were the scars?
Were on their chest, their arm, and in Colin's case, on the base of his penis. They got in touch with me, and I invited them over to my house for a face-to-face interview. At that interview, I said to both gentlemen, I said, amazing stuff. Now, do you want to get to the truth? Absolutely. Of course we do. We need to know what happened, Malcolm. We'll do anything. Are you prepared, independently, to go under hypnotic regression just to see if perhaps something else happened to you that night? Please, please, yeah, we'll do it, we'll do it. We employed the services of a very qualified hypnotherapist, and independently we took them back to that night, and your typical abduction scenario unfolded. Under the black, inky, almond-shaped eyes of these beings were red, yellow, and green perforations. Like, if you can imagine a fish and the fish's gills, you know, these slits in its body, they were like slits under its eyes, coloured red, yellow, and green. Some of these creatures were your typical greys, your 3.5 to 4 feet tall greys, childlike body, large pear-shaped head, almond-shaped eyes. Others were taller, about 7 to 8 feet. And they were small brown beings. Small, not large, brown, scrunched up faces. Some of these small greys had indentations at the top of their head. So if you can imagine a heart shape that they said that they saw. And Colin, at one point, found himself encased in this large glass cylinder. Imagine a man's cigar tube. Imagine that about 12 feet higher, encased in glass. Colin found himself in one of those, completely naked, and suddenly this object came out of the floor of this craft towards his eyes and started to rotate and rotate and rotate. And then suddenly this glass or whatever it was froze up, instantaneous. And at this point, Colin started to cry, and as soon as he showed some emotion, it stopped freezing up, and it just went back to normal. But Colin says, Malcolm, I couldn't move. I could only move my eyes. And what I could see to my left and to my right were about a dozen or so similar tubes or canisters with other naked people sitting in there. I definitely saw that, Malcolm. Gary Wood says, Malcolm, floating in the ceiling of this room was this lens-shaped device. I don't know what it was, Malcolm, he said. It was about 3-4 feet across, free-floating in the room, and I was absolutely mesmerised by it. I'm just looking at it. What on earth is this? What function is this doing? What's this all about, you know? And suddenly he became aware, like a pool of liquid, a man's shaving gel started to bubble up on the floor of this craft, and coming out of it was one small grey being. Gary Wood said, Malcolm, I couldn't move anything, but I could see this creature coming out from the floor of this gel. He says, Malcolm, I desperately wanted to punch one of these beings, and I couldn't move a muscle, I couldn't move my arms, and I was so despondent because they have taken me out of my home and then subjected me to this form of trauma. And he says, Malcolm, I tried to understand what was going on, but I know for sure that these words coming into my head were not my own. I says, what do you mean, Gary? He says, well, I said in my head, why are you doing this to me? And he says, this is what they said. Sanctuary. And he says, Malcolm, I don't know. It blew me away. I mean, why did they say that? And then one of these small creatures said, we have lives like you too.
We have lives like you too?
Yeah, yeah. So that could mean anything. What angers me is that UFO abductions have been going on for 60, 70, 80 years or more. Why do they still require what appears to be this genetic side, sperm, the ova? They say that it's to repopulate or regenerate a dying planet. You and I know the stories that many females have been re-abducted and shown a half-human, half-alien child.
Right.
Telepathically saying, that also belongs to you.
What is the sanctuary?
Oh, wish I knew. The chaps never asked anymore. You know, they didn't keep it going. They didn't keep that discussion going. Whether that was on their part or these beings' part, that's all the information that they got. So I'd love to know what sanctuary was all about.
Did they have any intuitive impression that sanctuary might mean this planet? Sanctuary might mean the tubes with the resurrection technology? Did they have any intuitive sense of what sanctuary meant?
It's hard to say what that meant to them, but obviously it does mean something to them for them saying it. Something that I don't think I mentioned in my book was that several months after this incident, Gary awoke one night and he saw one of these grey beings at the foot of his bed. And this little being, face contorted in sheer surprise at being seen. And Gary, for some reason, he found control of his body, can move about freely, and he jumped out of bed. He says, Malcolm, I really wanted to give this creature some of what my frustration was all about. He says, this is what happened. I jumped out of bed. It wasn't a big punch, Malcolm. He says, I punched this one small grey being, and it, you know, it's like hitting a paper mache doll or something. It just tumbled, 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 tumbled. It tumbled in somersaults, and it was hysterically funny, he said, and it just stopped, and it ran through the wall. We're still looking for answers. We're still trying to ascertain why. Why did this happen in the first place? We know about the hearsay about genetics, but when it happens to you personally, as it has to Gary and Colin, they need strong answers because it's affected their lives.
Good story, Linda.
And George, if you have been looking at Earth Files, you can see how these images and illustrations that are woven through by Gary and Colin are really quite amazing. And in fact, there is one section that I included at Earth Files that was not in the interview, and this is where one of the men looked down. He could not get up. He was paralyzed on the table. This was Gary, and Gary Wood said that he could see that there was a girl on the floor. She looked human to him, like she had permed hair, and he could not talk. And the only interchange as he, as a human on the table, and the female human, at least as it appeared to him on the floor, was that she was shivering and had her arms clasped around her legs as if to cover her body, and that the temperature was cold, which is something that abductees note often, that the rooms that they're in are cold. And she was crying, and she turned, and their eyes met. He couldn't move. He couldn't talk. And he said to Malcolm, he said, I will never forget that shaggy, loose, permed hair with blonde highlights. And if I ever saw her on Earth, I would recognize her. And I bring that up just to say that there are parallels in many other abduction cases of a human who thinks that they see other humans on craft. And that when it comes to the issue of Colin being in what was he described as like a glass cylinder, in my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, I featured three different people in the human abduction syndrome who all described seeing multiple clear cylinders in which there were either humans or looked human, or distinctly did not look human, and that the abductee understood that they were being preserved, cloned bodies being preserved. And one example was a woman named Linda Porter from California, and she said, this was a quote, I was shown a room with very tall, clear tube-like containers or cylinders on a raised platform. Inside these tubes, standing upright, naked, and appearing to be asleep, were humans, or at least they looked human to me, like they were in some kind of suspended animation. And another abductee from New Jersey said, quote, "We walked through the craft and we ended up in this humongous room with tubes. The walls were lined with these tubes. They appeared to be glass, about 2 feet wide and 8 feet high." Remember, in the abduction case in Scotland, they said maybe 10 to 12 feet high. She said 8 feet high, so these are tall. Cylinder, clear tubes, wide enough to hold bodies. The huge room was filled with these clear tubes, and inside were tall and shorter humanoid bodies. Then a third abductee, this is a man from Michigan, told me, quote, "These little gray things took me where there were three ladies inside of clear tubes. Each lady was in a different clear tube. There was some kind of dim light in the tubes. It was an eggshell white light. So beautiful, but it smelled like acid, sweet, pure vanilla, and it made me nauseous. The women in the tubes were alive, but not awake." And finally, there is the famous Betty Andreessen experience. And this also involved transparent cylinders. On January 25th, 1967, she was in South Ashburn in Massachusetts at 6:30 in the evening. Her parents were in the house and her seven children were in the house. So that's 10 people in a house when all of a sudden, as Betty described, she was paralyzed. She saw that her whole family went into what looked like suspended animation in the living room. She couldn't talk, she couldn't move, and eventually, in her very long, complex abduction, she ends up being taken also by small beings to what looked like an assemblage of clear, in this case, instead of round, they were rectangular cases. And she said, she drew this, it looked as if there were samples of humans, quote, of all races and timelines. And Betty Andreessen said she understood the purpose of those non-humans that she encountered was, quote, to preserve human genes for existence elsewhere because of an impending extinction event coming to Earth, close quote. So we're back to that extinction issue again. Yeah. But I want to close out with what I think is one of the most significant quotes in this book that Malcolm Robinson has assembled from his cases in Scotland. And this is Gary Wood talking about, after all of this and hearing the word sanctuary, and we have lives like you too coming into their heads from telepathically from these beings in this very strange abduction. This is a quote from the book. Gary also said that he knew these beings were not going to harm him, but the most vociferous statement that Gary kept saying repeatedly was, "They want to come here," meaning to Earth. He continued by saying that they are not too far away at the moment and were somewhere near Earth. Gary also stated that he is sure that there will be many more abductions occurring all over the world because, quote, "These non-human beings need us. We are very important to them. They don't want to destroy us. They just need us," close quote. And in the RAF Bentwaters case that I have been doing so much work, Sergeant James Peniston says they are time travelers facing a catastrophic future and are coming back to Earth to use us like Band-Aid.
Up next with Conversations with Linda.